Warning, the following podcast contains spoilers and swears. Hi there, what's your name?
My name's Evelyn Rogers. What's your name?
I'm your father, Scott Rogers. And what are we doing here?
Well, this is a podcast, if you didn't know.
I don't, because we're sitting in a chair.
Well, they can't see that we're sitting in chairs.
Right.
We could be standing. We could be laying down.
Yeah.
We could be playing video games at this very moment.
Just think of how different this podcast would be if we just spent the whole time just laying down.
It would be... You would fall asleep.
Would I?
Yes.
All right.
I would too.
Is this really how you want to start this podcast?
Yeah. Don't give me a look.
So what are we doing here?
Well, this is a podcast about the magicians and magicians-related things.
And what magicians-related things are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about the third and final magician's book, Shut Up, The Magician's Land by Lev Grossman. Shout out to Lev.
Published in
2014. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
How old were you in 2014?
12.
12.
Yeah.
And how far
before... No, 13. What the fuck am I saying?
How far before... how far after was the Magicians TV show that we
filmed
talk about?
They filmed the pilot in 2015, and then they filmed the first season came out in 2016.
So they actually waited for Lev to finish writing his books first.
Uh-huh, I guess.
And then they were like, all right, now we're going to make
a TV show.
We're
going to steal it, and we're going to change all of it.
We're going to change all of it and put in a lot of ass jokes.
Yeah, and dick jokes.
Yes. All right. Well, there's far less dick jokes in the books.
Yes.
I'm happy to report.
Uh-huh.
All right. So, let's talk about this book.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Me?
Yeah.
I love The Magician's Land. It's my favorite of the three.
Yeah.
My kind of favoritism goes, like, backwards order. I love 3-2-1.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, I think, are good, but the third one really made me sob.
Yeah.
So, and it has one of my favorite characters in it, which is Plum Purchase. I love Plum Poulsen Purchase so much. She is my favorite. She is a lesbian, and
that's unsubstantiated.
Not...
That's your headcanon.
It is my headcanon in my heart, but I also know it
your
to be true.
Your heart cannon?
But I also know it to be true.
Are you coining a new
in
thing?
In my heart.
Heart cannon?
Heart cannon? Sure. In my heart and soul, I know she is gay. I feel it. She gives the vibe.
Okay.
And it makes sense.
How does she give the vibe
off?
It
makes sense. Because she's Quentin's foil. And it makes sense.
Why can't she just be Quentin's Girl Friday?
No.
Why not? Or Watson?
Because she's literally Quentin's foil.
Or a boy wonder.
Ooh, I'm going to get into it. She literally is Quentin's foil because Quentin's introduction, the first line is, Quentin did a magic trick. Nobody noticed. And then you go all the way to Plum in book three, and the kind of sentence that introduces Plum, it's not like her first thing, but it's like, when Plum did a magic trick, everybody noticed. She's the antithesis of Quentin Coldwater. She is popular. She is extremely good at magic. She was raised with magic. And she's always known that, and she's always kind of known what she's wanted to be.
You know who Plum reminded me of?
Who?
Hermione Granger.
I could see that. But there's this beautiful, you know, foiling going on where you have Quentin, who was this nerd boy.
No, not a foil.
Boy. Well, yeah.
No, a foil is somebody who thwarts somebody else.
No, they highlight each other's traits.
No, they foil them.
They highlight each other's traits.
No, they're like, you foiled my plan.
No.
Yes.
No.
I don't think you're using that word right.
I feel like I am. I don't have my phone, so I can't check.
Okay, well, your mother's probably yelling at us, whatever the definition is, because she's really good with words.
Okay. Love is too.
Anyway.
I'm sure he listens.
I think the word that you're thinking of is they are...
They're parallels.
Parallels, exactly.
Yeah.
Or opposite parallels.
Yeah.
They're
which is a
identical
foil,
cousins.
Which is a foil.
I don't know about that. I'm not going to go look online, though.
We're not English majors here.
That's true. All right. So anyway, you like her because she reminds you of Quentin, but opposite.
I like Plum because she's her own character.
Right.
And I like how, I love seeing her journey of self-actualization and like the her whole acceptance of her roots and how that pushes her forward to, in the end, kind of accelerate the Fillory death process and, you know, also try and save it at the same moment, you know?
Can I say something about Plum?
What?
I like her as a character, but I feel like the last third of the book she was underutilized.
I agree. I personally would love to see some kind of one-off story where Plum goes off and has her own quest post the Magician's Land. Mm-hmm. I'm personally actually going to write that. I've very bare bones.
I have
500 words, but you know.
I think that's a good idea, but I also feel like you could have written a story about Plum where, as a little kid, she discovers Fillory accidentally.
That's just the fucking Fillory books.
And then forgets about it.
Dad, that's just Peter Pan.
Well, it could
that's
be.
That's just Peter Pan.
What's wrong with Peter Pan?
This is not a Peter Pan podcast.
Oh, but only if it was.
No.
There'd be more pirates.
More pedophilia.
No, there's no pedophilia in Peter Pan.
Jamberry.
No, don't go crossing the streams. Jamberry, his pedophilia did not... first of all, unsubstantiated. B... whether or not that happened, it's not in the books, nor is it implied in the books. There's mother issues all over the place in Peter Pan, but there's not pedophilia. There's not. Don't go bring in your gross 21st century thinking, sullying lovely 19th century
Peter Pan. Is a very small child with all of his baby teeth still who commits murder.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of racism in those books.
There's not a lot of racism. The Indians are portrayed very nobly in the book. Now, you're conflating the cartoon, which has very racist depictions of Indians, and a song that's kind of... it's very insensitive to the... Have you ever read the original book or the play?
Yes, I have.
That's because I read it to you, but you were like 7 years old when I read it to you.
I have reread it.
Recently?
Not recently.
No, not recently. So you are tainting it with your weird memory. So Peter Pan is not... Peter Pan holds up pretty well as the book to 21st century readers.
Uh-huh.
All right. Anyway, stop making Peter Pan gross. I'm giving you a look. Sorry, audience. You cannot see the look I'm giving Evelyn.
Uh-huh.
All right. Let's get back to Fillory, another made-up fantasy land.
Yeah.
All right. What else do you like about this book?
What else do I like about this book?
Yeah.
I love Alice so much. I love Niffin Alice. I love Alice after she comes back from being a Niffin. It is my favorite thing in the world. Because then we really see Alice with some agency and just a lot of, like, bite to her.
She's understandably angry.
Yes, and she's a changed
kinda
person.
Had it all, although she was twisted and kind of evil.
Yeah.
I mean, not as evil as the TV show makes her seem out to be. But definitely,
tortured herself.
Well,
unconcerned
about
amount of time.
Unconcerned about human things, right? Like that. Like she just realizes that everything is kind of dumb and futile and not worthwhile, and therefore that like she says, she just was laughing at everything.
Yeah.
Right, which is kind of creepy if you think about it. Alice, I mean, it's weird because you want to feel sorry for Alice, but it would have been interesting to have, for Lev to have turned Alice into a bad character.
Into a...
Like a bad guy.
Yeah.
Right? Even after returning as a Niffin.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I quite bought where Quentin and Alice's relationship were by the end of the book.
I think that if there were to be some kind of fourth book, they would be friends, and that would be the relationship.
Sure.
It's not that, it's not really, like, we don't know if Alice still loves him, and he says, like, whether or not Alice loved him, he was just glad that she was, you know,
right.
There was a world of her in it. Like, Quentin still loves Alice, but, you know, it's maybe... not that romantic love anymore, but it is still a love. And right. Alice does love Quentin in her own way, but also she is now relearning how to express those things how to cope with her experience as a Niffin for 10 years and how that changed her as a person. 7 years, sorry. And how that changed her as a person. Yes, I did. Shut up. and how that changed her as a person.
I think the most interesting thing about the Quentin-Alice relationship is that now...
They're equals.
By the end of the book, they both have experiences that are metahuman that now they can kind of say, all right, well, I don't necessarily... Like, I don't relate exactly to what your experience was, but we both have these extraordinary supernatural things happen to us where we have kind of ultimate power, and now we can relate to ourselves a little bit on that level. And that would be an interesting thing to read about. Like, what is the ram? Like, it's almost like coming off of a high, right? Like, the two of them had this, you know, magical high, as it were, where... Alice was, an omnipotent thing for 7 years, and Quentin becomes literally a god by the end of the story. But then he gives it up, right? And Alice gives it up, albeit reluctantly, right? It's Quentin's fault or whatever. That's the reason why she's no longer a goddess. It would be interesting to. Learn more about, all right, how does that change you?
Well, you are going to read the graphic novel, which I'm going to make you read. It's called Alice's Story,
mm-hmm.
and it's co-authored by Lila Sturgis and Lev Grossman.
But I mean, how far does it go after?
It follows Alice's perspective in The Magicians to when she dies and becomes a Niffin.
Right.
And it's very... I think it's good insight into what it's like to be a Niffin and the insight into, like, Alice's experience.
Right, but I'm talking post-Niffin. Like,
There's no post-Niffin graphic novel.
Right, right. Well, I'm saying... are you saying Lev write something?
No.
We've already given Lev a long laundry list of... Yeah, he's got
stories.
He's got a lot to choose from, right? From The Adventures of Bingle... to the myths of Fillory, to him just going back and writing the actual books of Fillory, which I still think, Lev, you should do, but I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. But yeah,
he's busy. He's got the Silver Arrow. He's got the map of Tiny Perfect Things. He's got his space Lev opera.
Lev obviously is proving...
He's got a bright sword
Lev is proving that he can write multiple things at once.
Yeah.
So, therefore, what's just one more book on the stack, right? And so that brings me to probably the part of the book I like the most, which was the World in the Walls?
The Door in the Page, aka my favorite part of the book as well. I fucking love that section so much. All the descriptions of the Chatwins going to Fillory is like my favorite thing. I love when they're riding the bicycle and then it suddenly transitions. And when they fall out of the tree and then they're in Fillory. And, like, you know, the first time they go through the clock, obviously, classic. But then, like, you know, they just go through a different door and suddenly they're there all of a sudden. It's great. And then how they kept looking for it as they went to school and kept... And you know, how they're like, oh, at some point we just got tired of pretending we didn't know shit anymore. So then, like, I forget which child it was. Probably Jane, you know, like, riding away on the horse or whatever. It's so good. And then... we get to that moment where Rupert is talking about how, like, they pried open the book and kept it open so Martin could get in.
Yeah.
And it tried to close. Ah, it's so good! It's so cool.
Well, what it does is it definitely...
I love it.
...gets you sympathetic towards Martin, who, you know, which is ironic because he's the bad guy in the first book.
Yeah.
And so you feel sorry for him.
Yeah,
and
you don't really get any context behind his actions until after he's dead. And
right.
Jane is like, well, we think maybe Plover, like, diddled him a little and that's it.
Right, right. Well, that's the one thing where it's like it was alluded to, which I feel I don't really like that the show took literally that one
detail
sentence
and
blew it out into this huge thing,
like,
right?
Keep like blowing it and blowing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it keeps pervading the feeling of the show. And I mean, you know, I'm sure that I mean, Lev was a producer on it, so he obviously was like, all right, run with it.
Executive producer, yeah. Which means you don't really have power. They just give you a fancy title to make you feel better.
Oh, is that what you're saying it is?
Yeah.
You don't think he was involved with the plotting out of the story?
I know for a fact he could give suggestions, and they could do whatever they wanted with his advice, and that was it.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes more sense. But, yeah, I mean, in the book, it's, you know, it is hearsay, right? And there's never anything that we directly see. Well,
Rupert also alludes to it.
But yeah, yeah, he says don't ever be alone with Plover, right? Yeah. Like, that obviously speaks volumes.
Yeah.
You know, something bad is going on, right? We don't know what, though, whether it's abusive or sexual or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, though, I think that was... This is again my point for I still would love to see Lev write these books.
Yeah.
Because I think that he could do obviously we already know he loves the Narnia books.
Uh-huh.
And he already understands how they work. And it would be with Lev's ability to write kind of cast off ideas that are really evocative.
That girl floating along on that book.
Yeah, the girl
floating
on
the book. Where'd she go?
Right, but there's so many of those little moments. I would love, that's what I would want to see more of. I want to see a whole book or a whole series of books.
Land sharks, carnivorous giraffes.
Whatever, that have that, you know, cozy horse, whatever.
Chalk man.
Yeah, the chalk man.
His kids came up with the cozy horse.
Yeah, did he?
Did you know that?
Did they?
That's pretty fucking great.
Yeah. That is
Galaxy
a giant,
Brain. Shout out to all of Lev Grossman's kids.
That it's a giant.
Plush
velveteen horse.
Velveteen horse.
Yeah. I thought the Chalk Man was pretty cool too. Actually,
Chalk Man's pretty cool. I just think of it. I know it's supposed to be, you know, like those chalk lines that are like.
Like the Nazca lines.
Yeah, like the Nazca lines. I just think of like a stick figure.
Yeah, that's I thought of it as kind of
a giant stick figure.
What I call a thick man. Instead of it being a stick man, you double the lines and it's a thick man.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so I like that. Although, the scene in which the Chalk Man shows up, which is when Fillory is dying, everybody
it's
is
so
just
cool.
Kind of tearing at, you know, everybody is doesn't know what to do, right? They're just all tearing at each other. The thing that I thought was kind of the most heartbreaking was where they're like, all right, there's all the regular animals.
And all the talking animals.
And there's the talking, and they're fighting
and they're
like,
killing each other.
Yeah, fuck you.
Oh, the centaurs are all like supremacists.
Right. Yeah, the centaurs were jerks. And Janet is like, screw those
there's
guys.
No
I'll throw some
here,
I'll throw some lightning bolts at the centaurs because I hate those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But things like that, like the fact that the talking animals and the non-talking animals don't get along is like there was nothing like that. Like there was no hint of any of that.
It's because
and then all of a sudden it's just like
they're all wrapped up in their own little narratives, and Quentin especially.
Right.
So
well, I would have been curious to like Quentin saw the aftermath, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder maybe it would have been too much for Quentin as a character.
Uh-huh.
But it would have been interesting to have seen his perspective of all that bad stuff going down.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't feel like...
Well, I think we get a good perspective on that with Janet, though, because she, like, you know, cries about it.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Gets this whole fucking aerial view of what's happening, and she can see everything that's happening how devastating
and
it is.
And she, you know, in the
and
books...
And she loves Fillory in her own way, right. So we get that... sad moment. I cried the whole sequence from the beginning of Fillory getting destroyed to the end of the book. I cried the whole time.
Did you?
Yeah.
That must have been why the pages were warped.
No. That was my second copy I gave you.
Oh, okay. The other thing that I thought was kind of weird was how Julia...
She's a dryad.
Right, but she was kind of mostly absent from that.
Yeah, because she's just fucking around on the far side doing her own thing with her tree.
Right. But then she kind of bursts out of the earth.
And it's great.
Yeah, it was unexpected, mm-hmm. right? Like so the other thing that I didn't quite get was the... Like, I like the idea of Umber being kind of the shadow version of Ember.
I thought that was cool.
That was good. And
the whole creation
Well, the whole Black Spire castle where Martin goes kind of on the, he goes to the, essentially the underside. What is it from
it's,
the
It's like Stranger the Things. Never-ending story.
Oh, I don't remember
the story.
I just remember a horse sunk in quicksand.
Yeah. It's that. I forget the name of it. The eternal sadness something something or other.
The swamp of eternal sadness.
Yeah. I almost said eternal stench, but that's Labyrinth.
No, I thought eternal stench was.
That's Labyrinth.
No, isn't that Princess Bride?
That's Labyrinth.
Which is the one that has the farting forest?
That's the, oh God, the fire swamp. There's too many swamps in fantasy. All
right, well, everybody loves a good swamp.
But then, like, it makes me think of the never-ending story and, like, the, I think it's, like, the bog of eternal sadness or something.
Right, right, where the, you know, where the more sad you get, the more you sink.
The more you sink. And right. It feels like that because, you know, the epitome of sad is Martin jumping down and going.
Well, but he flips it, right? He like masters it.
He gives away his humanity.
Well, sure, yeah, he gives it. Well, he already lost
that's
his
the bad thing.
But he had already lost his childhood, right? Like that's why Ember. That's why he thought Ember and Umber were keeping him out. It's because he was like, look, I don't have my. You know, part of it was
suspicion. Just thought he was annoying.
Do you think so?
I think so.
In the book, they also say that they thought that it was because Plover was doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
And so, well, that's what he says. He was tainted.
That's what he says. That's what Rupert thought it
right.
was. But really, you know, when Janet and Poppy and Josh talk to Umber, he's like, oh, yeah, we just, like, didn't want to keep him.
He was just a
drag. And then they're like, after that happened with Martin, we changed the rules, so then that's why you guys could stay.
Right, right. Well, I think it was that kids weren't, like, once you became an adult, you weren't allowed. And then because when he said, well, when we changed the rules, because all the characters in are adults.
No, it was literally just like, we don't want them to stay. And then they're like, well, that didn't work out. Guess we can let them stay.
Well, why? So they think that Josh and Janet and Ellie and all them are a pain in the ass. So they're like, we'll let them stay anyway.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they'll turn into the beasts.
Yeah. But,
maybe.
Oh, God. The whole...
That's an interesting alternate reality story,
where
right?
Where
they all, like, all of them become, like, the beasts in order to get back to Fillory.
Yeah, that would be depressing.
Or they all have...
Hey, write your fan fiction.
Nope. Not writing it.
But the whole door in the page sequence is such a great sequence. Like, I have a very distinct memory of reading it for the first time and having this impending sense of dread just culminate on, like, layers upon itself until you get to the final reveal that it was, spoilers, we've already said it, but, like, that Umber is the one who, like, took, basically, Martin's humanity.
Yeah.
I literally, I gasped out loud, and I was so surprised.
I was,
you know, having come from the show to read the books.
Right, right.
You know, you don't actually, it's not that, like, I thought maybe, oh, the Umber was not going to be dead, and I figured, you know, that because of the show, but
right.
Never did I anticipate that kind of, like, betrayal, especially since those two are much more in the kind of, house as Aslan, where they're, like, this fatherly figures, both Ember and, animal is comforting.
I never really got that from Ember or Umber.
Yeah, well,
like, to be
honest,
that's
the thing is that they're not.
Well, they're not, but I'm saying
both of them are more dignified than their television counterparts.
Well,
so then you get this kind of, if you're coming from the show to the books, then you feel more comforted by that dignity. And then to have that betrayed is even more shocking.
I don't know. See, I wasn't.
I don't know. I just, it was really shocking to me. And I felt really hurt. And I was once again betrayed by Lev Grossman.
No, you weren't betrayed.
He owes me emotional reparations.
He doesn't.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't.
He did a very good narrative, and it hurt me personally.
So, from my perspective, I never found Umber or Ember really, like, maybe because I'm not as into the Narnia stuff and any of that, like you guys are, right? So I don't have that whole, you know, oh, the respect for the, you know, the talking animal, God, whatever. And I always found both Ember and Umber to be annoying and capricious and kind of a drag. And so when Umber was like the one revealed that, oh, he took essentially Martin's soul, I was like, well, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I wasn't like shocked by it.
I was shocked.
I was kind of like...
I was shocked, but in the end, not surprised
right.
I processed it.
Okay. But when also Ember showed up and was like, kind of a jerk and scared to
yeah.
to die because for some reason you have to kill a god in order to
It's the metaphorical killing your father to surpass him and so on. And those and Ember is
right.
the father figure, which is why Quentin had to kill him because he couldn't kill his physical father because his physical dad dies and his biological father dies
See,
in the beginning
now,
of the book. And then Mayakovsky cannot escape his own ice prison, but he gets the approval of his kind of mentory father, so then he has to kill the physical the other father in order to fully kind of move forward.
Okay, so Quentin
has a lot of daddy issues.
But all right, so here's my biggest problem with your theory then.
Mm-hmm.
And that is
it's just a theory, but right. I feel it gives that vibe, you know, because there's a lot of
right.
father figure stuff
sure,
in this
sure.
book.
All right, here's my problem with your theory.
What?
And that is, I never felt like Quentin had a relationship with Ember.
Mm.
Never.
Yeah.
Never at all. So
not when he came to talk to him about the quest.
Yeah,
in,
none
in
of that.
King.
And because Ember was like aloof
yeah.
and, you know, all that. Like, and then even the bit later where, was it Umber or Ember was like, oh, I wanted you to chase me because I thought you wanted.
That's Umber.
Umber. All right. Well, anyway.
But that's with Janet and Poppy and Josh.
Right, right. But I mean, like both of them, they're just really aloof. They're not like, if Ember this whole time or Umber this whole time had some sort of relationship with at least one of the human characters, then I probably would have felt the betrayal stronger and
yeah.
gone, oh my gosh, you know, this is... And then that moment of Quentin having to kill Umber, which...
Ember.
Ember and Umber. That
Umber,
technically
Umber
kill
dies
both.
Easier.
Well, he just gives himself up,
Quentin
right?
turns into a dragon. It's fucking
yeah,
awesome.
I mean, that kind of came out of nowhere.
It's
and,
fucking awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really like that.
Wouldn't you want to turn into a dragon?
Well,
it's like Dragon Tales.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? Like, it's Quentin turns into a dragon, and then he, like, turns into a god, like, 5 pages later.
That's
it
because...
It was, like, too much...
He gets, like, the god power. You know what it is
but
kind
But it was
of
too
like,
much back-to-back.
You know what it's kind of like? It's
one or
it's
the other.
Like,
pick one or the other.
Princess,
dragon or god.
It's like Princess Mononoke.
Oh, okay.
When the forest god dies,
right.
so the head of the forest god gets cut off and it dies, and so everything in the forest starts to die.
Right.
And the thing about the forest god is it can't come back to life once it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's dead forever, but what happens is when they restore the head to the body, the god dies, but the earth gets revivified. So then they...
So the body needs to be
so then intact. So then what happens is... All that dead stuff goes away, and they come back to a new world without gods. So actually, it's very similar to the end of the Magician's
yes.
Land. Actually,
yes. Well, you know, you're allowed to.
Well, he's
be
also
inspired.
Said he's been very inspired by Ghibli films.
Sure. All right. So wait, let me ask you a couple other questions. I have more questions.
Yes.
One is when Niff and Alice is traveling through the universe and sees the creation of
Fillory.
Is the
turtles all the way
no,
down?
No, hang on, not the turtle.
But it is.
There's a tiger. There's like a beat up tiger
yeah.
who goes into the ocean
mm-hmm.
to die. Like drowns themselves in the ocean.
Yeah.
Right. Is that supposed to be Aslan?
It could be a kind of version of Aslan.
Because I mean, you know, it's a little bit of a twist. Instead of a lion, it's
a tiger.
Instead of a male, it's female.
Yeah.
But
I
like,
think it's, I think that's
think,
definitely some kind of.
Do you think Lev is
homage.
Saying, I'm killing Aslan I'm making my own world out of this
Probably.
The bones of the old world.
Probably. I mean, that's, you know, it's the same thing with Quentin. He just revivifies the old
well,
world.
Well, he just mends it, which
he
is his
it.
Talent,
because
right?
Because he's minor mending.
Well, I like that.
I love
But it's not minor, obviously.
Wait, can we talk
no,
about...
No, I'm not done
oh,
yet.
Okay.
I still have other questions.
But I want to talk about something that's very important.
I know. Just
in
hang
this
on.
Book.
Put a pin on it. So what about why does, if a tiger dies, why do rams come out?
Because it's god stuff. You don't need to have... like sense for god
it,
stuff it's god stuff
all right I guess
there's no
I guess
logic
like Greek
to
mythology
it.
I guess
yeah.
why do you throw a shell into the ocean and you get Venus out of it or something
yeah
I don't know I just thought it was kind of weird
sea
I mean
foam.
I yeah, see foam as the wool is cute you know it's a neat metaphor and the shells are the horns
I love that the Umber is the shadow. It's so
yeah, the shadow
cool.
is the best. That's actually
it's
a really
so
good
cool.
idea.
I love it so much.
I thought it was originally going to be kind of a Romulus Remus kind of
uh-huh.
thing, but I like that it was the shadow. But that said, I would have liked to have seen, other than that one moment, I don't know. Did I want a moment where Umbra was like, "Ha ha! I'm in league with the giants and the centaurs and the bad guys."
I've said before,
Lord of the Rings is bad guy.
Remember, I've said before to you that in that Google talk that Mr. Grossman gave, where he talked about how he wanted to approach his book, and how the Magicians is decentralized from the villain narrative. There is no true villain in any of the stories. They are just people, they're all gray, and they're all just doing their shit, and it's like, what happens when there's no main villain, but you still do all those bad things?
Right.
So it's the same case here, where I think the story would suffer from having a villain, because it is not made with the intent of a main villain.
I will just say that there are allusions to villain characters.
There are allusions to villain characters.
Like, they talk about Josh defeating, what was it, the Whisper King or something?
Mm.
And there's, like, a couple other references to that.
There's allusions, but there's never any outright villain character.
Right. Well, not for the main narrative.
I think it's
other
well
than
served.
Reynard the Fox.
Reynard the Fox is just a douchebag, terrible character, awful, cool to picture. Cool, very cool to picture, but terrible. Awful
I also want to say, though, I mean, not that we needed to, but I would have at least liked to have seen Asmodeus kill Reynard the Fox.
Oh yeah, but isn't it so great to hear that she fucking gut him like a fish?
Yes.
Oh, and also James.
Poor James
died in a skiing accident at the age of 76. Yeah, I've talked about it so many times.
You spoiled it. You spoiled that.
But you didn't believe me.
Well, no.
You didn't believe me.
You spoiled it. And then when I read that, I was like, aw, poor James.
Poor James.
But I mean,
he lived
not
a
that.
Long life, you know?
Well, did he have a happy life,
though? That's the question.
Was it a happy ski accident
or
unhappy?
Sad?
Was it like...
Was he skiing on one ski or was he skiing on two
did
skis?
Did he die on impact of a tree or did he get impaled by it and
avalanche
hung on to the
that's very graphic,
like darn it, Donnie Darko'd himself.
We just watched that movie.
Anyway,
poor James. Pour one out for James, insert last name, Jameson.
Did he have a last name?
No. Didn't even get a last name. But James, you're in our thoughts and our hearts. We miss you every day.
I do like, speaking of everybody's ultimate fate, I do like Elliot, the mention that Elliot had two volumes, in the show, which
it's
they
sexy.
Still don't explain at all.
But it's cooler that it's not explained in the books.
Yeah, yeah.
I have two things, but I'll talk about this one first because I thought about it first.
All right.
So I love the library sequence so much. I love the library in the books. It's so much cooler than the show library. Fuck this show library. The room where it's
like
every book you've ever thought of.
Oh, that's from the that's from the Sandman.
I know, but I love it so much. I want that so I can just read all the things that I've always wanted to read.
But then what you would do is you would just come up with premises.
Yeah,
and then boom, there's the book.
Yeah, that'd be
great.
That's just
every writer's dream, right? I mean, I think of all the comic
books. It's literally
books
a dream.
I should have written, could have written, didn't
you could
write.
Still.
I'm not dead yet. You're right.
You're not dead yet. You could do it.
I have to put on my vision board.
Yeah, make a vision board. But I love the library sequence. I love that Alice fucking punches Penny.
Yes.
It's so great.
I feel bad.
That's
the one thing that the TV show did well. I mean, I admit, I'm still not a huge Penny fan. I know. You roll your eyes. I can literally hear them rolling your
I
head.
Can understand Book Penny because he's
no,
an asshole.
I don't like Book Penny either. I probably like Book Penny less than TV show Penny
is more sympathetic and wonderful.
Yes,
and
exactly.
I love him.
And fleshed out.
And
that.
Fleshed
and
out.
I feel that Penny in the book ultimately is just a plot device.
Yeah, I mean, he just fucks off and does his own thing.
Right,
you know?
But I mean, it's just Penny.
He's having his own adventure. That would be a graphic novel. Penny's side of events where he becomes like a super monk and he just rides around on his hoverboard, you know, doing magic without hands.
I mean, it's
fighting dragons.
It's kind of like
stealing from the couple and all that stuff.
Seeing Penny, I mean, you're not old enough for this, sorry. But seeing Penny in the book was like seeing somebody that you went to high school with and then you see them later at your 25th year anniversary of high school. And on one hand, you're like, oh, look, it's you. But, like, the more you kind of learn about them, the more you're like, well, I'm just not a part of this person's life. And so I kind of care because I used to care about them, but I don't really know them anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so when Penny kind of showed up, I'm like, oh yeah, there was a character named Penny that was in the other books that I kind of didn't like either. And then, of course, when Alice punches him, that's
like,
very...
Woo!
You're like, all right, he deserved that.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was like... I don't know. It was kind of like Penny's... It was like Julia. Like, Julia was such a big part of the second book, and then she just went away.
Yeah.
And Penny was a big part, well, somewhat of a part of the first book, and then went away.
Yeah.
And after that, it's like, I'm sorry, all my attention and my emotional investment are in... I mean, there's so many characters already in that book, right?
Yeah.
So I have to be invested in Quentin. I have to be invested in Elliot, who Elliot is...
Four different POVs.
Yeah, at least, right?
Plum, Quentin, Elliot,
yeah,
Janet.
Plum, who I'm still learning to like, you know.
I love Plum.
Janet, who is probably... This is probably
the
her best book.
This is the first time we get real insight into Janet, because
Janet,
this is the first time we're in her head.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love... Janet Margot from the TV show much more now.
Well, she
and reading Janet in the book is like, yeah, this is like,
this is the beginning of
this is
a
why
more fleshed out character,
right? But this is why Margot is such a great character, is because of how
they
Janet
took
is
everything
written
from, yeah,
right, yeah, everything from this book, and I'd say that other than Rupert and the stuff about Alice, Janet is probably the most involved and interesting character in this third book.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, which is interesting because Rupert we never meet, right? We're only reading his biography,
memoir.
Essentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the other thing that you were going to bring up?
Okay, well, I'll say this first. Is the whole Fillory library, like, room, oh my god. I can
what,
see
that
it
it's
perfectly.
In the shape of a...
I can see it perfectly in my head, and I fucking wish they had actually made this fucking set. I think it would have been so
map,
cool.
The
that
books
it's a map.
The map.
I can, like, see hanging books in my brain, and, like,
why don't you,
tried making a model of it with that shitty cat box, but I need to get actual wood, and I'm gonna do it.
No, like, you know what you need to do.
I'm gonna do it and make a bunch of tiny books,
no,
and it's
you
gonna
need
be
to...
awesome.
Save up your money and buy a house
and
make
a
mini library.
No, I already have my plan for a mini library in my future home.
Which
and
is?
I've had this plan since I was like 8 or 9. And it is going to be, I'm going to get some kind of have this off room. And then I'm going to put a wardrobe, take out the back so you can go in. And then I'm going to paint the walls to make it look like it's a wintry forest, and it's gonna have like white carpets, bean bags, stuffed animals, and one of those low bookshelves that like go all the way around the edge of the room, so then
so
you can put cushions on the top so you can sit on them.
Kindergarten reading room.
Fuck yeah! And then in the middle is a lamp for the room, but it is a lantern that, you know, goes all the way. It's in the middle,
I
and
fully
it's
support
great.
This.
And I've literally had this in my brain
you
for
know
like
what
years.
You know what I would like that I always wanted that I've never had?
What?
I just want a bookshelf that you push and it's a room behind
my
it.
One of my best friends, Isabel, that's how you got into a room in her parents' house, and
oh,
it was fucking
man.
Awesome.
What
the
if
first
I,
time I stayed over, I was like, this is amazing.
What if I turn our bathroom, the door for our bathroom, into a little bookshelf?
I would support you 100%.
Would you help me make that?
I think we are both not very capable in building things, but we could try.
All right. Yeah, I know. Well, I did help build the bookshelf.
I'm
on
down.
The staircase,
I am very.
But
I'm
not, that was mostly
able
Brian.
And willing, but we would have to have some kind of thing on top of it so the books wouldn't fall out, like a
brace or something.
No,
well, maybe
like,
it'd only
like
be
doors.
For paperbacks or something.
Like doors, like little cabinet.
It can't
doors.
Be too heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't. Maybe
it opens
it maybe it wouldn't work in that room.
Maybe.
It's
a little small.
It is pretty small.
But I think that's an idea.
Well, maybe I'll just do a picture then, and just like take a photograph of a bookshelf, and that's not as cool. But I know. The real
maybe.
Bookshelf would be better.
Maybe.
I don't think I'm ever gonna get my dream house. Sadly.
There's still time.
No.
Write those comics. Make that comic money.
No, yeah. Yeah, that big comic
that
money.
Big comic money.
Has anybody gotten rich off of comic books other than...
Jack Kirby?
No, Kirby did not.
Stanley.
Stanley, maybe, but he had a lot of media stuff. What about... I would say if anybody got rich off of comic books, it was probably Todd McFarlane. Right? The creator of Spawn.
Yeah.
Because he had enough money to then buy some... like balls and stuff.
Anyways,
like $1 million
balls.
$1 million baseballs.
Oh.
Right.
Anyway, this is not a Todd McFarlane podcast.
No,
here's
it is
my
not.
Second thing.
All right.
So, one of my favorite things about the third book is that it goes more into what magic is, or the concept of magic, and how Quentin in the first book, like, it, Dean Fogg got it wrong.
What do you mean?
Well, first we find out Quentin's discipline, and he's like, wow, this is underwhelming. But then, as time goes on, he's like, wow, you know what? Even though this is an underwhelming discipline, I've now realized that this is something that's, like, always come intrinsically to me, and now I know I'm a person that fixes things. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool. And he, like, feels this love and this connection, and he says it's like, you know, bringing something, it's like waking something up, and helping it remember what it used to be. And he's like, how do I impart that on students? I also love that Quentin loves being a teacher. It's my favorite thing. It's so sweet. But then later on in the books, Quentin goes to mend the world. And there's, and then later still, when he goes to the Drowned Garden, it talks about what he thought magic was. And he's like, yeah, magic can come from pain, but what magic actually is very strong emotion. And it is that change in effectiveness and what you use it and how you shape your life. That is the magic in, like, the world. And that is such, like, a beautiful and wonderful transformative message. And to see him having learned that after going through all this stuff is just, like, really impactful and lovely. And then also the whole Drowned Garden sequence made me cry. You filmed me crying about it.
Yeah, I know.
Which is very mean.
Maybe I'll post it on
the
Twitter feed.
Not again. But that really got to me because it's Why? This whole moment where, you know, Juliet, she's like, here, as a reward for fixing Fillory, you get to go and see.
You get to go wherever you want to go.
Just once. You get to go to the far side and see what was up down there.
Right.
You know, Bingle's fucking around.
Is Bingle
Abigail,
there?
Abigail. Oh, of course he is. Remember, he went over.
That's right. He did go over.
Adventures of Bingle. But Juliet takes him to the Drowned Garden. She's like, yeah, this is where my tree is. Isn't it cool? But then she shows him all these plants and how they are the personifications, or, you know, plantifications of feelings, and she points out a flower that keeps blooming, like, and you see them
keeps
how
dying
they
and blooming.
Dying and blooming, and how they all bloom at different times because it's when a person in the world feels it.
Right.
And she points out this one flower. I did at one point memorize her whole speech about it. I don't think I have it memorized now. But she basically says, you know, this flower is this feeling that you had, Quentin, you know, long ago when you first read the Fillory books, and you felt hope and joy and amazement and wonder and possibility all at once. And, you know, this was the potential that you felt as a child, and, you know, that imagination and wonder, and you wanted to change the world. And it's this really, like, wonderful moment, because it's not only, like, a callback for Quentin and his original wonder and love for Fillory, but it's also, like, the empathy and understanding of everyone who's reading the Magician's books and seeing themselves in Quentin and all these characters who are experiencing this fantasy world that they wanted to experience. I'm getting choked up. What the fuck? But it's, like, this really meaningful moment. And then right after that, you have Quentin, you know, a few couple days, weeks later, working with Alice, and he, you know, he still loves her in his own way, and they don't know where they stand with each other, but there's that potential there. So everything is, at the end of the book, about new beginnings and about moving forward. And then he finally, you know, creates his new land, because before, you know, he fails because there's something missing. And I think it's not just that, like, experience of being a god and mending his old world and, like, moving forward from it. I think it's also that kind of solace that he gets from seeing those feelings in other people and finding, like, the peace within himself for that. And knowing that he still has that potential and opportunity to grow and change as well, right, as he moves forward. And then he finally gets that moment to create his own land. And at long last, he gets to ride on the cozy horse. And also the fact that, like, the potential that his land goes to Fillory, and it also comes from Earth, so he creates this bridge of the two things that he's, like, learned to love, because he learns to love sort of Earth in the second book, and he loves Fillory, even though it sucks in the first one. And it's finally the joining of those two, and this new world is born out of his love for these old things, and he's ready to try something new. And I think that is, like, so wonderful and such a good message. And then they just ride off into the distance.
That's a better interpretation than I had, because when I read, like, Quentin has this opportunity to create his own world, make whatever he wants.
And Plum, also, this whole book is fucking Quentin and Elliot yearning for each other. Just saying, fourth book, when do they confess? Anyway, but the first thing Quentin does is plants the pocket watch that Elliot gives him at the end of The Magician King. And Plum, when she sees him take it out when they're in, like, the car, and, like, Stoppard is looking at it and trying to fix it, and it doesn't work the whole time, she's like, wow, this must be a gift from someone who loved him. And she assumes it's Julia, but we know it's Elliot the whole time. And the fact that that is the very first thing that he plants in his new world, in this bridge to Fillory from Earth, is this piece of his heart and this piece of love from Elliot, and it becomes the new clock tree sapling. Oh, the symbolism. It's just so good. I love it so much. Also, the fact that Elliot, the whole time, he's like, damn, Quentin would have loved this. Oh, I should have told Quentin about this. Man, I wish I could talk to Quentin. And then he gets it back, and he's like, your old girlfriend's back from the dead, and you got this other chick? And he gets all grumpy about it. Like... it's great. Anyway, Lev, you totally misread Brideshead Revisited. They separated because of homophobia and the prejudices of the time. I'm not saying they should have gotten together in the third book, but I do think that they should have a conversation if you ever read a fourth. Thank you very much.
That's what the TV show does, though, right?
Yes, it does.
Is it rectifies that?
Sort of.
In the one sort that's of. Coming up, it does.
Yeah.
Right, well, you at least get that.
We don't know when this episode will... This.
All right, well, Life in a Day is episode I'm talking about.
Yeah, but then it's...
All right.
Yeah, but well, anyway, it's very soft feeling, very good.
All right, your interpretation of Quentin's land has turned his journey. Opinion around, because when I first read it, I was like, wow, what a boring world Quentin made. If you had the opportunity to make any world that you wanted, and that's what you made, was just some trees
it's like the 100 Acre Woods, bird. But even bigger.
See, but I don't have a love kids, for the 100 Acre Woods.
And it's implied that, like, I don't kids go into can the get in there too, so then they can eventually get
but
to Fillory.
What is there that's...
So they can have that magical
but
experience.
What magical things are there
well,
in that
Well, we
world?
Don't know. That's why he goes to explore, because
so
there's
that,
so much potential
so
at the end.
Does that mean Lev is going to write a story, and then, like... Quentin will be the old gray-haired wizard in the pointed hat.
Maybe he will become the Gandalf of
he'll
his
be the,
dreams.
He'll be the Tumnest of...
Tumnest? No.
Whatever. Or the White Witch of...
No!
whatever Fillory Plus or Quentin's California Adventure, whatever the second gate to Fillory is. Right? I don't know. I was just underwhelmed by Quentin's creation.
I
was like, if you
sweet.
Can make anything you want, make go nuts.
I love that it's a bridge, and I love that kind of
the
representation of it all, of like the bridge between.
It's a back door. Is
it
really
is.
What it is.
It's
just a back door to Fillory.
Yeah, but it's you know, it spans his own land, and there's so many things that he doesn't know what's
right,
gonna
right.
be
well
there.
It, I mean, it's implied that it's big and it's
yeah
vast, but...
it's huge. Like, we were only gonna make, like, you know, 10 acres or whatever, and it's fucking huge,
right? Well,
yeah.
Once again, Lev leaving the seeds
yeah.
for lots of potential stuff. Maybe in 10 years
yeah.
or so, another 20 years will go by. And
put
Lev,
me in, coach.
And Lev will need, you know, money again, and he can write these books or something like
uh-huh.
that. But yeah, it was, I mean, there were things I liked about this book, but I didn't love it. I didn't fall in love with it, and I didn't have the feels for it that
uh-huh.
you did.
Yeah, I got choked up talking about it.
I know you did. You're getting misty eyed. But I didn't. And I don't know why. I don't know why I didn't like this book as much.
Well, I think because the kind of fantasy that, like, you read as a child is not.
I read.
But you didn't read that kind
of.
Cause,
I read Peter Pan and I read Wizard of Earthsea and I read.
The thing is that, like, the magician's books are a love letter to escapism from the perspective of, like, realism. Right. So there are two types of fantasy novels that you can read. There's escapism and there's realism. Escapism is, you know, like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings,
Flying away to Neverland.
Flying away to Neverland.
Wizard of Oz.
Narnia. It is literally, you're reading this to try and escape, and you're trying not to think about real world events. Realism, I think, would be more like Game of Thrones.
I don't like Game of Thrones, though.
So. Yeah. But this kind of story is like a love letter to those people that read those escapist novels.
Conan the Barbarian?
It's more realism, I feel. Yeah.
Have you read any Conan?
No.
Uh-oh, maybe we should read some Conan and do a book report.
I don't want to. I don't want to. But I feel like The Magicians is a love letter to those children who read escapist fantasy to cope with stuff as kids, and then grew up and...
Maybe I just didn't have that bad a childhood that I felt like I had to flee.
And now have come to this kind of realist perspective. And that they still have that love for that escapism and they don't want to lose it. So it's this gentle love letter and kind of, in a way, goodbye to that kind of escapist fantasy of your youth and that kind of coping method and that stuff and facing the real world and knowing that the real world has real potential and real change and real joy in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really great. And especially considering how, when he wrote the first book, he was in a really, you know, bad place and it was like a culmination of a lot of like depression and depressive stuff and how he wrote it when he was much younger in life. And it took, 10 or so years. And that's why you get that magic is pain, because that's what he felt. And then you have this, you basically see the author grow with the character and how you see, Quentin and probably Lev too. And he's talked about it before, how his outlook on life has changed from that extremely insular and singular view of how life is painful and awful and there's nothing to live for and you just live with these fantasy things, but even these fantasy things are bad too. Now there's potential and good in this world. Okay, I'm crying again. And you know how good it is, and it's good to look towards the future and to, anticipate life in that way. And I think it's really sweet, right. And I think it's a really good message. And that's why I always tell people that The Magicians is a 3-book character arc for one whole character.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, I've probably voiced my opinion that I'm not a big fan of, multi-part books. I would just rather read one narrative in one go, but I agree. I think that The Magicians is best read as just one work. The 3 books are one work. Kind of like Lord of the Rings.
Yep. Treatment. Let's shove them all into one.
Yeah, exactly. How about if Lev were to release a complete edition, all in one volume.
I'd buy it.
Maybe if it was illustrated by somebody who was illustrated. I don't know any good artists, though, that
I don't know, yeah.
would do the, be good for doing The Magician
book. Yeah, I don't
book.
Know. Not, yeah, I definitely don't know any artists who are currently illustrating a copy of The Magician.
If there were a built-in bookmark in it.
That would be so cool.
It would have
cool.
to be, what's his name, the tree?
Farvel.
Farvel. Yeah, Farvel would have to be the bookmark.
Yes. No, I think it would be a clock tree.
Oh, yeah, that's tree. True. All right. That makes more sense. My Farvel idea. Him a cigarette.
I would still love that, though.
Yes.
Shout out to Farvel.
Maybe Farvel could be embossed on the cover.
On the cover? He's the main character. He shows up for one
No, he's
book.
The worst. He's like the bad and like the most minor
I know.
Character.
And I love him so much. I've made 2 plushies of him.
All right. What else?
We haven't even talked about the whole heist thing.
Oh, see now the heist. I hate to say it. I like the heist in the TV show more.
There's many heist episodes. Well, I think they take inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, having the idea of there's magicians doing a heist and they've got to prepare.
It's very good. They got to make a team. They're all staying.
Right. Well, who doesn't like a good heist, right?
Airport.
I mean, now that you've seen the best heist anything ever, right? Come on, admit it. It was good.
It was not.
It was good.
I did not like it.
It was good. You did. You liked it. You laughed once.
Once?
Yes.
At you.
That was the Rick and Morty heist episode, which is the best.
I do enjoy the heist. I love the push sequence at the beginning.
Push is not a good game.
No, because it's cool. No, it's cool that, like, you know, the cards change to Alice as the queen, because it's like, you know, she's fucking with him the whole time. And it's so cool to, like, in hindsight, see that, like, that's what she's been doing, and, like, just watching him.
Right.
You know? I love that. And,
As far as a game goes, it was pretty much just war.
I know.
It's not a good game.
And I love the crow.
So you mean cool. The blackbird?
The blackbird.
Yeah, because crows have black beaks and blackbirds have brown. And that's what I learned. That was my big takeaway from the Magician's Land was the difference between blackbirds and crows.
Yeah, you learn everything. You know, learn something every day.
Yes, exactly. Learn something new every
day. But I do like the heist. My favorite, I do enjoy it. I love Betsy, aka Asmodeus.
Yeah.
Love
her. That was actually a bigger reveal for me.
You?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was like, wait, what? That's, and then I was like, wait, who is Asmodeus? And here's the other thing that was terrible in that book. Was there was at the moment where Quentin is in the garden and he's having this very big emotional moment, and he's like, oh, I got to talk to Hamish about this. And I'm like, who the fuck is Hamish?
I have opinions.
I don't remember. Who is Hamish?
I firmly believe.
Who was Hamish? I don't remember.
I firmly believe that Quentin Coldwater and Hamish Bax fucked at least once.
Who the hell is Hamish?
Hamish is Quentin's only friend at Break Bills. They smoke together. He's the one who Quentin goes to in the greenhouse when he's like, yo, this page is like, it's got a weird plant on it. Can you tell me what this plant is? And he's like, I can tell you what this plant is. And
then
they
like
all,
another teacher,
they drink
right?
and smoke together. They're both in their 30s.
Oh, that's right.
He's
I totally
awesome.
Forgot
I
about that character.
I love Hamish Bax, another character I enjoy and love.
See,
so
I totally
great.
Forgot about that
He's
character.
Awesome.
But he was at the beginning of the book,
He's
right?
in the beginning of the book,
oh
yes.
Oh my god. See, that just didn't... That went right over... I was like, who is it? And I'm like, I kind of know the name,
I
but
Hamish.
I don't remember where I know him from.
Oh, I have another thing. I have a thing called the Quentin Coldwater Back Pain Scale. And it's 1 to Quentin Coldwater. And Quentin Coldwater is falling out of your flying device, you know, 100 or so feet and you know about in hitting the ground and then throwing your back out afterwards. That is the Quentin Coldwater in the 1 to Quentin Coldwater. So if that ever happens to me, you know I'll be at Quentin Coldwater levels of back pain.
I hope you never have that much back pain.
I'm thinking about more things. I had a thought and then I lost it.
All right. I thought the school stuff was interesting,
cool stuff,
you know.
Yeah.
It was
I love the whole when Plum goes through the secret door and she sees
that was,
all of the...
I found that very confusing.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be confusing.
I had to read it twice because I was like, all right, I know, like, I kind of recognize, you know, I got it. Like, when I read it, I'm like, oh, that's the scene of them fighting Martin. I get that. And then she was like, I'm going to slowly back away now. But
I love Plum.
It would
so
have been,
much.
I kind of wanted to go back and look at the book to see if there was any indication of her being in that scene.
No, because what it is she, what I kind of perceived it as is, like, you know, Niffins aren't really ghosts, but they're in a kind of ghosty vein. So what happened was when she went through that kind of door and she kept going, she eventually started seeing, you know, what Alice had been doing over and over again, which was rewatching the kind of stuff of like when,
so wait,
of when
Alice
she
made
died
that passageway.
Well, it's clearly
I
like
I thought Quentin made it.
Quentin made the passageway, but it like clearly led to something that like could let you see memories of some sort and experience those memories. And
right.
and what Alice does when she's a Niffin is the majority of her time she just rewatches the stuff that hurt her the most. And you know that is another Alice as a Niffin is another kind of indicative version of depression and how it manifests in a person, because there's the kind of depression where, you know, you feel really awful but you can't do anything about it and you
right.
just kind
Helpless.
Of sit in it, you know. And then there's the kind of person who when they are depressed they get into a very self-sabotaging sort of way, and Alice is that kind of manifestation of that extreme self-sabotage where she is rewatching her own death and rewatching the trauma of that and all the awful things in her life over and over again. So then, you know, Plum comes in and she's just like, oh shit, what's this, a bunch of Break Bill students getting traumatized, that's right. crazy, you know. And that's what Alice has been watching over and over again.
So wait, why was Alice Allison watching all the
kind
of Salem witch trial era? Because there was that whole other Revolutionary War.
Well, she can only go back so far, you know. She can't go see the future. She can only go back. She went back to Fillory and stuff.
But she went back to the beginning of Fillory
time. Yeah, she went back to Fillory time. But, you know, Fillory time is wonky.
All right, so let me ask you a question.
Yes.
So Fillory needed a god to die to be made.
Yes.
Is that true for every universe in that universe?
I don't know. Because remember, the old gods are function differently from the new gods.
Right.
So, and, you know, probably every new god is different.
But what about the god that made the universe that Quentin, the reality that Quentin and those guys
We don't know. We don't know about that one. Because, remember, they have, in the first book, they have that whole theological discussion, Richard and Janet and Elliot and Josh and Quentin and Alice at the dinner table, where they're talking about God in relation to what it means to be a magician, and does God exist, and if so, like, why did they give the tools to do magic? And they're talking about, well, God doesn't exist because, you know, we just have this magic, so it's just us, versus Richard's argument, which was like, magic is proof that God exists because he, you know, God gave the tools for us to function in this world, and so on. So I think for, like, Earth universe, modern universe, where Quentin is from, it's very unclear. Probably, if there is a god in that universe, they don't show themselves or anything. Versus Fillory, which is, like, simpler in some ways, you know, because it's, like, Earth is flat and on turtles. So, you know, and...
That makes it simpler,
It simpler. But, you know, it functions in a different way. So every, you know, every world functions differently. You know, Josh goes to all those different worlds and...
Right.
You know, he, like, how come Teletubbies those worlds, are real.
But how come those worlds aren't collapsing?
Because, you know, they all function in different levels of reality and absurdity, probably.
Why didn't they just evacuate everybody to one of those worlds?
Well, the Netherlands was kind of going through a whole makeover phase.
Right, that was not clear either.
Well, it's basically either the Netherlands is turning into or turning back into the Wood Between Worlds, which is from Narnia. Because, you know, Lev couldn't explicitly reference the Wood Between the Worlds.
But those books are in the public domain.
No, they're not. And he could have gotten sued. So he only implied it.
Oh, okay.
And that's why, you know, you have the sprouts of grass and trees coming up between the cobblestones, and the... all the fountains are, you know, they're spilling over, and you get all these great puddles, because in the Wood Between Worlds, there's really tall, it's really tall trees, and there's a bunch of puddles, and you jump into the puddles.
Oh, okay. So,
you will read that.
Eventually.
Eventually. Dad's reading the Narnia books.
So it's under duress. So the Narnia books that will come into public domain in your lifetime.
I mean, maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
Well, because Netflix bought the film rights again.
Right, but that's the film rights. That's not true. The book rights.
I don't know. Maybe they will.
Maybe you'll write your own.
You know, like Lord of the Rings doesn't Narnia. Come into public domain until like 2050 something.
Well, you'll be alive by then.
I probably won't be, but unless you will. The climate disaster doesn't, you know, kill us all or whatever.
Maybe you should plant some trees or something.
Watch them grow.
Yeah.
That's a Hobbit quote.
Oh, okay.
go back to your armchair. Plant your trees. Watch them grow. If more people in this world valued home above gold, the world would be a merrier place. Rest in peace, Thorin Oakenshield.
All right.
Love you, man.
All right. This is not a Thorin Oakenshield podcast.
Not a Hobbit podcast.
No.
But it could be.
Well, the Thorin Oakenshield is not a Hobbit.
He's not. He's a dwarf.
I know. That's why I said that. All right.
Yeah.
So what else did you like in The Magician's King?
Land?
Whatever. The
Magician's Land.
The Magician's Land.
So many things. I love the League. Just the League full of lesbians.
Meddling women.
Lesbians. You know, what's his name? I always forget his name.
Winston?
Yeah. The guy they're bullying, he becomes an honorary member of the League. So
does he?
It's definitely a gay people league. Because that man is definitely also gay. I just believe that that's the Break Bills GSA, man. The League is the Break Bills GSA.
What's
and it's
GSA?
Gay Straight Alliance.
Oh.
And it's very funny to me. I just believe it to be so. And I know it in my heart. It's true.
Okay.
I love Quentin doing labyrinth magic, I think...
Yeah, that was interesting.
Tracing labyrinth magic is really cool. It's a really cool aspect of the story.
Plum just conveniently having a house, though, reminded me of Harry Potter, where... Yeah. Where, what's-his-face, the werewolf had a house.
You mean...
Oh, no. Wasn't it the werewolf?
The grim old place.
Yeah,
grim Sirius old, Black.
Yeah, thing. Sirius Black. Wasn't he a werewolf? No, he
no,
was
that's
a,
his boyfriend.
That's his boyfriend was the werewolf.
Remus Lupin.
Yes.
Whose name is Wolf Wolf.
No, wait. Remus Lupin had a wife, though, right?
Yes, he did.
So it was just bisexual lover, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what's up. All right, what else? Prince of Mud. Just a giant snapping
turtle. Yeah,
Prince of
Mud, jerk, yeah.
Big, I love turtle. Janet. Fucking owning his ass.
Yeah, that was good.
It's awesome. And then I love, you know, Elliot and Janet. We haven't even talked about the fucking duel.
What duel?
Elliot's whole thing. His opening scene is he fights Vile Father.
Oh, yeah, the Vile Father.
And he, like, has all this magic, you know.
Yes, up going, the yin yang.
Yeah, it's awesome. And he's just like, let's fucking go, baby. Yeah, and then,
then he does his triumph walk.
The best
back.
Is where he dresses up like a hermit right before, and then he punches one of the Lorians and he says, get the fuck out of my country.
Yeah, that was good.
It's pretty great. I love Elliot.
Yeah, Elliot is great in this book, actually.
It's wonderful. Well, we finally get in Elliot's head, too.
Yeah.
And I love Elliot's narrate. I love the way he talks to himself. It's so funny.
There's some good nerd... Again, Lev has some good nerd references. There was one that made me laugh, and I'm trying to...
Which one was it? Oh, I remember. I think you pointed it out to me.
I don't remember what it was, though. It was
early
on in the book.
You were like, this is a reference. I caught this reference. You can't fool me.
Yeah, I forget what it was, though.
I think it was... Well, we can't sit here thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have the book in front of me, so I can't reference it. But it was early on in the book, and it was like it was kind of like a Free Trader Beowulf reference, you know, where it's like, nope, Lev, you can't get past one get past
can't
me.
I know all your
nerd references.
Uh-huh.
But it was good. There were some good nerd references in it, and again, you know, that's what I like is that he just it's part of his. I have a feeling that if I ever met Mr. Lev Grossman and we had a conversation, we would definitely be speaking the same language.
I think you guys would get along.
Yeah, I think so
we all would get along.
Yes, probably would. The whole family would probably get along. Hopefully we would get along with their kids and wife as well.
Yeah.
Who I know nothing about.
They seem chill.
Yeah, well, if they're married to Lev, I'm sure they are.
One of his kids likes Undertale, so there we go. Handshake
there
right
we go.
There.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Well, what was your, like, favorite bit overall of the whole series? What is your ultimate, like, first, what is your favorite bit of the whole series? And then what's your, like, ultimate takeaway from all three books in, like, a culmination of having read all of them and processing them with your brain and analyzing them afterwards?
The moment in Magician's Land that surprised me, but I also felt very cathartic. Was when Janet beats the shit out of Ember.
Yes, it's my favorite. I love it.
Where
and
she
then
just,
she's
like
"You wouldn't be a good king. You're too much of a pussy anyway."
Yes.
Oh, it's awesome.
She just wails.
Poppy
on
does
him.
A little like flip while she's pregnant.
Yeah,
I love that for her. It's so funny.
Yeah, Poppy is pretty great in
she's
this.
She's awesome.
Too.
I have a
and
personal...
I love when and I love when Josh is wearing the armor.
Yeah.
Like the he just like gets. Slammed by what was it like something falls on him or hits him and he just kind of rolls away.
I know
he's just like sealed up in the like it's it the thing was like between Elliot's fight and Janet and Josh and Poppy and even to an extent Julia, seeing all of these characters as like they're really at this level they're superheroes. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, they are masters of their magic, and they have all these spells and all these devices and weapons. And although I didn't remember, like, Quentin pulls a sword out of somewhere, and I don't remember that at all.
So, in the first book, when Quentin is being tested for magic, it's the final scene, it's the end of the day, he's super tired, he's been taking all these tests, and with no context, he's had to, like, hold a lizard at one point for no reason, and he's like, what the fuck is happening? He had to do card tricks for Vanderway, you know, this whole thing. So he's finally with a bunch of teachers, and he's also with everyone who's left. So, like, Penny's in the room, Dean Fogg's there, They're all just waiting, and they're like, we're going to have a quorum. God damn it. We're going to skip a year if we don't get a quorum. And so, you know, Fogg's like, do some fucking magic. And Quentin starts to do magic tricks, and they're like, nah, 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 do some goddamn magic. And, you know, Fogg tries coordinating his fingers to, like, do the magic. And then, you know, Quentin makes all of the cards shoot up and right. out. Yep. And so that happens. And then he takes the roll of, he takes the roll of quarters. There's a bunch of quarters that's on the table for magic tricks as well. He takes the roll of quarters, and when he draws the quarters, it becomes like a sword, a flaming sword.
Okay.
And then he like points it. He like points it at Fogg, and he's like, "Tell me what's going on, and why I'm here," you know. And then he like sticks the sword in the table, and he's like, "I feel awesome." And then it's like immediately ruined afterwards, you know.
Oh, okay.
But then that's like. The fool comes around again. He pulled that sword when he didn't know what he was, and he didn't know magic, and he didn't know himself, and now he's pulled the sword again, where now he knows himself, and he knows his magic, and he knows, you know, he doesn't know everything, obviously, but he, you know, he's got that, like, knowledge and wisdom of age.
Right.
He's 30 now. He's got it.
He can pull the sword again.
Metaphorically. Uh-huh. But yeah, that's where that's from.
All right. Well, that's good. I completely didn't remember it. Mm-hmm. Much like I didn't know who the hell Haymitch was. Yeah. I'm like, wait, where's that? What's that sword?
It's
what's
a the cool sword.
Well, yeah, you gotta have a cool sword in a fantasy book.
Yeah. Also, I have a personal headcanon that I share with my friend Addie, and that is that Poppy and Josh's son, his name is George.
Okay.
I just think that George Hoberman is a good name, and I think that they would probably name their son George. Just feels right.
I don't know.
It feels right. It feels like they would name him George.
I would disagree. But well, there's only one
person. What's your headcanon? What's your headcanon for Poppy and Josh's child? What would you name their child?
Would I name their child?
Yeah. His name is George in my heart.
I don't know enough about Poppy and Josh from the books to
You just read the book.
Yeah, but we don't really get to learn much about them.
We know more about Josh.
We do know a little bit more about Josh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Josh would try to name, you know, the child something like Sandwich or something.
That's just, you're just projecting.
Soda. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, maybe there'll be a sequel, Adventures of the Child of Fillory.
Plum and George. Plum has to babysit
George. I mean, I thought that was an interesting point in the book. Is that baby a child of Fillory or a child of Adam and Eve?
No, it's a child of... okay, so the baby is kind of like the new life thing.
Right.
You know, so it's the same kind of thing where at the end, Fillory is granted new life.
Right.
And... you know, then presumably probably like...
Baby will probably be the first baby
born. Baby will be the first baby born in Fillory.
New Fillory.
But it's the same Fillory, you know? Right. It's not like it's a new world.
Refixed Fillory.
Refurbished Fillory.
I see. If I were...
Upsold on Etsy for $138 Fillory.
If I were Quentin, I would have made an improved Fillory.
Mm.
Right?
Well, like, he restores most of Fillory, but he does heal what people were healed. You can't bring people back from the dead.
He buries the dead,
which also is such a great act of like mercy from him too, that he finally puts them all to rest, which is really sweet. You know, whatever implications
He's got no reason to be a dick at that point, right? So that Quentin was really ever a dick character, but
yeah, I just have this wonderful like kind of image of like Quentin like sewing Fillory back together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be really cool. I have drawn it before.
I like the idea of him kind of gathering up all the loose dirt and kind of packing everything back
together. And how he doesn't know how long he spends doing that.
Right.
Yeah. Because, you know, time they said, is like, they thought it was like years. 1,000 years.
Yeah. But then he just showed up and he's like, boop, all right, keep the conversation going.
Well, time for like a god is like different for time
sure.
for like
well,
a
that's a biblical
mortal.
Thing, right? Yeah, like so. 7 days. What is 7 days to a god?
Yeah, so... You know? It's pretty cool, though.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it was nice. It just... I would have...
I just love that he mends his...
Right. I like the... I like
broken
the...
Broken childhood.
I like that thing. That he, like, finally finds what he's good at, and then that's what saves Fillory.
Yeah.
That is... I mean, that's a very
things.
Lovely...
Like...
metaphor.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
He doesn't break things. Quentin mends things.
Right.
And that is just so important.
Well, and then that's what's... Yes, now you're getting misty-eyed again because you're thinking about episode whatever of a season whatever. Yes, I know.
I hate
they missed
the
point.
TV show
well, but
so
but you
much.
Can't but you can't hate them because all right,
I
so
can hate
so
them and
hang
I will.
On. All right, so to your question, which was what do I think of the books as a grouping?
Whole.
All right. So, out of the three, the second one is still my favorite.
Mm.
All right, I like
one. So, what's the order?
1, 2, 3. No, 2, 1, 3.
2, 1, 3?
2, 1, 3 is my, that's my order.
Uh-huh.
Right? Then, I think that, you know, I know there's a lot of things that disappoint you about the TV show. But, that said, I think the thing that the TV show needs to be commended on is that it expanded on all of the characters.
I agree.
So they're all, like, if just the magician, if I had read the books in 2014 when they were finished up,
yeah,
I would have been, I probably would have said, well, I really like these characters, but I felt like so many of them got such a short shrift that it's too bad. I would like to see this author write more about these characters.
Yeah.
Kind of like how when I watched The Force Awakens, I went, oh, I really like these characters in this new Star Wars movie. I'm curious to see what new adventures they go on.
You now, should read some fan
now,
fiction.
Now, unfortunately, The Last Jedi, even though I don't hate it, it was not the adventure I wanted from those characters.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I felt disappointed. So if I were a Magician's fan in 2014, I would have been disappointed because I'd be like, well, that's it. There's really nothing else. Right?
Yeah.
So I think that as the TV show, the thing that I hope gave to Magicians fans, and if you're a Magicians TV show fan who had read the books, I would love to hear your opinion on
email
this.
Email us.
Yeah, email us or Twitter us. I would love to have hear their thoughts on, like, I mean, I don't have the energy to go onto a message board and read, you know, past posts and stuff, but I'm sure that the one good thing to at least come out of the TV show is that we spend more time with Margot and Elliot and Quentin and Alice and you know, but, even and Julie. I mean, even the Julie, yeah, Josh. Well, Poppy's a non.
She's
Josh.
She's
Poppy gets
Josh
a short
and Poppy
shrift.
Are like mostly completely different.
Right, right.
I feel
and,
like,
and I don't.
And
I haven't seen
sucks.
Plum yet, so that's so that's another run.
I think the only good thing they did with Plum in The Magicians is that they cast Ryan Steele, because Ryan Steele is awesome, and I fucking love her as Plum. And also, I forget his name, the guy they cast as Hamish, also perfect. Love him.
Okay.
But that is about the extent of the good things that they did. Shout out to the casting team.
Well, all right, and speaking of casting, as I read through all of the books, I never really got a huge, like, mental image
of anyone,
of anybody, except for
Quentin, because he's got white hair.
Elliot,
because he's all he does though is say that he has the wonky job.
Well, no, because Hale Appelman did such a great job
embodying.
On the show embodying the character that when I read it, I heard his voice, which is
air
something.
Air high five.
So yeah, Hale Appelman again. We're going
to
praise you
Shout
on
out
this
to
podcast. Yeah, I don't know if you ever listened to our show or not, but Evelyn is shaking their head. No, but if you ever listen, you should listen just because we love you and you did such an amazing job that it, your Hale, even if, you know, if I read anything else with Elliot in it, it will always be Hale Appelman's Elliot.
Yeah.
I think you.
Well, I think also Hale also approached the books with, you know, he read all of them and then
right.
he really understood it.
Yeah.
And that really comes through
right,
his
right.
performance. And also Jason too. Really understood.
Yeah, no, I think everybody, I mean, Margot is great. And Margot,
shout out to Summer.
You get to see so much more of her. I mean, even though I don't really like the fairy plot or any of that, I do like that there's more Margot, you know.
Yeah.
She's just a really interesting, amazing
character. I think all of those actors did wonders for the characters.
Yeah. They definitely elevated all the characters.
Especially considering what they had to work with. Script.
I think the only one that, I mean, I hate to say it, but I like her, and I think she's done a great job, but I don't quite, the Alice in the show and the Alice in the books are
very
different,
yeah.
right? And it's kind of I kind of feel the way that Alice is treated is more like how Poppy or, you know, like it's a drastic, not, it's not, but it is. I
she
don't know.
She goes through a very drastic kind of character arc in the show. And I do enjoy the kind of, like contradictory depth that she gains from, like, her experience with magic and that kind of stuff. And being, you know, brought back so soon.
Yeah.
You know, I think being brought back so soon really changes how she, you know, works through the world. And also, you know, they changed her family dynamic.
Yeah, but I don't think that we ever got to like Alice in the TV show.
Yeah, I think I feel like it's very dependent on, like, that script and how they handled that in the writer's room.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, a book is one person.
Right, right, right.
You know, and an editor. But it's mostly one person doing all that work, and, you know, and so that's why everything is more consistent.
Right.
So.
Well, but also Alice is gone for almost the entire second book.
Yeah, she is gone for, you know, most of the third, too.
Not Alice
as, like, an actualized person. Alice as an infant is there, but
right.
those are
but that's,
different
But
entities.
Then that's what builds into that character. Yeah. That's why it's, like, kind of by the end, I'm happy for Quentin that she's back, but I'm not necessarily sure if it was still the right call.
Yeah, and that's what it's supposed to be. It's right. like she's been brought back from the brink with bacon and chocolate and socks and sex, which is pretty damn cool. Also, I love that because that's also like a representation of, like, you don't have to find a huge thing to live for. It's just those tiny things.
Hey, that's what I say. You know, if you have nothing else to live for, at the very least, you can live for lunch.
Yes. And you could live. You just think, like, if you want to die, like, just think you won't grow up to be, like, a hot dad. And who doesn't want to be a hot dad?
Right. Who doesn't want to be a hot dad?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a hot dad.
Don't demean yourself on this podcast.
I this is very complicated, and I'm not getting into it.
You are loved.
Yeah, but am I hot?
I think Mom thinks that's yes.
I think one person thinks I'm hot,
and that's all you need.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
but, yeah,
two.
Maybe two. Who's the second person?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Hey, well.
If you think I'm hot, go ahead and
email us.
Email us on Twitter. Send it on Twitter. All right. Anyway, well, all right.
That
Yes, that was the magician's theory.
Quentin's dad loves Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yeah. That was
shout out to that.
Yeah. Shout out to Jeff Goldblum.
Shout out to Jeff Goldblum.
All right. So, yeah.
That's
so
my last note.
In conclusion and summary, I would say they're worth reading. They're mm-hmm. well-written books.
Yeah.
There is so much room for additional things to be made. It's a wonderful world that Lev is...
Pick it for fan fiction, baby.
Take it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of great fan fiction out there that I'll never read. But
you should read my fic.
Maybe I will.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll read yours. But yeah, you're trying to get me to read the Narnia books.
No,
which
I'm not.
Which one do you want me to do?
You voluntarily read that.
No, that's
I didn't
just,
say
that, that's,
read the Narnia books.
That's
you
just
picked
an oppressive
it up with your own volition.
That's an oppressive weight that's been on me since I met your mother.
Okay, well.
You know, because I'm sure
don't
that,
blame me then.
Well,
blame Mom.
No, because you are the extension of that Narnia passion.
Sorry.
And so now I'm feeling the double
the guilt.
Set of eyes on me to, that I haven't read. Yes, that was exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. So that will maybe be the next one. We maybe we'll continue this book.
Start
you know.
Talking about books?
Yeah. Because we're going to run out of episodes eventually, right?
Eventually.
So maybe we'll
do
branch
fantasy.
Into a little bit of fantasy books or something.
That would be fun. I have fantasy books.
Yes, but I have books for you to read as well.
Oh,
don't make a face.
I don't want
to
read Conan.
Well, Conan is good, actually. It's fun. Conan is fun. All right. Okay. Anyway, there's lots of great fantasy books out there. Then that is our commercial for the week. It's brought to you by
fantasy.
Books.
Oh,
buy
books.
Books are good.
Books are
read
good.
Books.
You should buy books from bookshop.com.
Or you should buy books from a local bookshop.
Because bookshop.com sources all their books from local bookstores and has them shipped to you. Don't fucking buy from Amazon. They're garbage.
Well,
fuck Jeff Bezos. He's a garbage man. Buy from bookshop because...
But Amazon was a little bookshelf at one point.
But now, their workers...
Right, they treat their workers badly.
Water bottles and stuff, and it's garbage.
Right, right. That the tree, you don't. Yeah, there's no excuse for treating people badly, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
so
that said,
bookshop is actually really good.
Let's keep politics out of our books for a second and just read a book. That's really what our commercial is about.
All books are political.
All books are good.
No, not every book
all
is
right.
good.
A lot of books are good.
Yeah.
I've read some bad
curate
books,
your taste.
That, well, learn what you like.
Learn right? what you like.
And
get yourself a bookshelf.
And then share it. Share it with a friend.
Yeah.
Don't just hoard them, but pass them around.
Yeah. Well, write your name in them so then people don't take them home and then leave them there.
Or
for
you
a year.
Write your name in them and then eventually in
or
the future.
Call them
people,
and make sure they return
no,
them.
No, then people are
start
like.
Start a home library so you can make sure they return them.
Oh,
on
there
time.
You go. Or have that little, make one of those
little
mailboxes
things.
Outside of your house.
Yeah, make a little home library to share your books with your neighbors.
Right, when you're done with them, move on. Curate, you know, have your.
Curate,
a collection is not meant to be donate. Hoarded like dragon's treasure, it's meant to be spread around.
Yeah.
Don't look suspiciously at my collections of video games and uh-huh. board games and books.
I just looked to my right.
Yeah, I know that. I saw that. I saw that look. Hey, one day I will get you to play all of them. If you want me to get them out of the house, you have to play them with me.
But not all video games are good. Just not all books are good.
Not everything is good. That
not
is
everything
true.
Is good, so curate your taste, read The Magicians.
All right,
and
there
write,
you go.
And write it nicely on
Goodreads. And also...
Read The Silver Arrow.
And also write
fan fiction
to us.
Oh yeah, that's
how
too.
Do and if they want to write to us about their thoughts, your thoughts of the Magician's trilogy, where can they write to us?
You can give us your opinions at Fillory Father on Twitter and at Fillory and Father on TikTok, I guess. I need to post more there. And fillory and father@gmail.com. Send us an email.
Yes, we would love to read your thoughts and opinions. And whether you like The Magicians, which one is your favorite? What's your favorite order?
What's your favorite order?
Yeah.
Who's your favorite character?
Yep.
Do you have any opinions about the endings? Like, do you
all
think
right.
Elliot's
they don't need
ending
to, they don't need to write a whole essay.
Him?
We just want them to write us.
What color do you think the new White Spire is going to be?
Even if you send
Mauve
us...
Spire... Teal Spire.
Even if you send us an email that just says
Salmon Spire.
Hi.
Yeah.
That's we haven't
would
even
love that.
We haven't even received that yet.
No highs.
No, just hi.
Just hi.
So send somebody, whoever the first person is, to send us a hi, we'll
get a shout out.
At the very least a shout out.
The very least.
Right.
Hey, and where can people find you?
They can find me on not on TikTok.
Not on
actually,
TikTok.
You did record something of TikTok.
Yeah, I put it on our TikTok.
Yes, but anyway.
A PSA.
Yes, a public service announcement about what? What was it?
The podcast.
Oh, about the podcast, right. I forget.
Listen to the podcast.
Yes.
If
well,
you're
already listening,
this,
so
already
we don't need
listening.
To we don't need to tell you that.
Good job.
Good job. Thank you. Mighty Bedbug on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
All
I'm not
those
Mighty
things.
Bedbug on Facebook. I'm just playing old Scott Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can see me in the Game Master documentary, or you can see me on YouTube.
Read his books.
Yeah, you can read my books, Level Up and Swipe This. There are books about game design. That's
audit
it.
His classes.
Or you can play my board game, Pantone the Game, or Ray Guns and Rocket Ships, and buy those on Amazon. But you hate Amazon, so buy
don't
them from
buy
a,
through Amazon.
Buy them from a local game store
yeah,
instead. How about
support
that?
A local game
there
store.
There you go. We love local game stores.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it, right? No, wait, what? You have some place to be reached
yes, I
as
do.
Well? But what about Filler and Father?
I already did that. That was the first thing we did.
I know, but what do you need twice as much?
You can find me on right. Twitter at @wow_then. Also on Instagram at @FishyDuaros and on Patreon under FishyDuaros as well as under Evelyn Rogers. Also have a website. It's my name, Evelyn Lee Rogers. No second middle name because that's too many letters.
That's it.
That's it.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you to Lev Grossman for writing The Magicians.
Yes,
they're
thank
pretty
you, Lev.
Good books. They yeah. make me cry on the regular.
And thank you for Evelyn for making me read these books.
And thank you, Mom, for making me watch the show.
Yes, and now we have yeah. a podcast as a result.
Now
always,
we have a podcast.
Always thank
the domino
you to
effect.
Your mom.
Yeah,
we
thank you,
love
Mom.
You. There's
shout
a,
out
here.
To Mom.
Here's a kiss, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Mwah.
That
all
really
right.
sounds awful.
That was just for you.
Just for Mom.
All right. So thanks for listening,
thank
and
you for listening.
We'll catch you next time on...
Well, you're going to see us season 4.
Oh, yes.
Season 4.
Yeah, season 4 coming up.
Yeah,
not all bangers.
Not all bangers.
All
in
right.
fact, one some of the worst episodes.
All right. Well,
aside from
it.
Season 5.
Save it for the podcast.
Also... As of now, when we are recording this, I just wanted to shout this out. Today is the day after the 1 year cancellation of The Magicians. Air 5.
No air 5s for that. Okay, all right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Fillory and Father. Hooray, we did it.